Allie, you want to introduce what we're doing here?
Yeah, I got hooked on looking at Craigslist ads a little while ago. The misconnections in particular. It could be anything from somebody driving down the street, you lock eyes, and you're like, I'd like to chat with that guy. I wonder if he'll see this. Then you put an ad in saying, we locked eyes, you, Subaru, that type of thing.
I usually find when you lock eyes with somebody in the car next to you, they speed up and turn their view away from you.
Yeah, maybe flip you off, something like that. But I love them, and I think you will, too.
Oh, yeah. And now it's time for Misconnections with Ally McKay.
May I ask, though, in your years of lurking on Craigslist misconnections, what is the percentage of men who are now having second thoughts and want to chase down a woman they saw on the street versus the other way around?
It's pretty equal. Woman, there's woman for man, there's man for man,
no,
there's woman for woman.
You're talking about escorts now.
I think you're talking
about misconnections.
Oh,
so
that's
there are,
where I've gone wrong.
There are women who will see a guy at a Dodger game that they like, and they will think, oh, I should have gone up and talked to him. Well, now I have a second chance. I'll put it up on Craigslist and hope he sees it.
Absolutely.
That's
I will read a couple of those, but I need to start with my favorite one that I told you about last time. But this will let you understand my psyche and why I now look for these. This comes courtesy of a gentleman in the bread section of a grocery store. You were the hot brunette with curves that farted in the bread aisle last night. I was the tall guy next to you that looked over and asked, was that you? You quickly replied, no, it wasn't me. You almost seemed insulted, I would ask. As the stink grew, you continued to deny your flatulence, but it was evident. I tried to get rid of the stench by waving two loaves of ciabatta bread. You proceeded to storm off in an angry manner. You're beautiful. And even though you're a liar and fart like a Clydesdale, I'd love to meet up for a drink sometime. So I read that and I was like, I am in. I will scour these.
That's a love story for the ages
right there.
I hope they got back together.
Absolutely.
Right?
Speaking of love stories, what about Juror 25 at the LAX courthouse?
Okay.
I was summoned to do my civic duty last week and was called to a courtroom where I saw you for the first time. You were the prosecuting DA. Tall, blonde, wore your suit well, and had wonderful oratory skills. For 4 days, I observed how you worked in a courtroom, and I was quite impressed, even as you were nursing a cough. I was looking forward to seeing you again today, but unfortunately, the case was settled out of court. So that's a woman, Bean.
Okay. Now, we had a discussion last time we did this feature about is it really a misconnection if you know where the person works?
Right.
But this is an attorney who probably travels courthouse to courthouse based on the case that he has.
100%.
So she can't automatically find him unless she knows his name.
Right.
That's a good one. I hope they get together, too.
Yeah. You will see this dude a lot in every city. This one's in the San Gabriel Valley. Huge pregnant beauty. To the beautiful pregnant woman who followed me into Walmart Saturday afternoon, I couldn't help but notice your big, beautiful round belly. Looks like you're about to pop. If interested, I'll totally rub down that belly with cocoa butter. He talks about Walmart, Target. I swear to God, he's just hanging out at the front, checking out pregnant ladies. It is concerning, but I respect it,
sir. How many pregnant ladies are looking for love?
Not many, I'm thinking. I think they have it covered.
Yeah. Or a random guy to rub cocoa butter on them.
Exactly. This one I appreciated because it's very specific. Woman for man in Hollywood. Nathan Fielder, if you're reading this, please contact me. My name is Ingrid. I can see from your television show you utilize Craigslist a lot. Please respond.
Wow.
It might work.
It might work, absolutely.
It's not going to work.
No, how about this one? I was on the metro listening to music. Earbuds in. Felt a little pressure. Tried to sneak out a little relief, so I farted. I couldn't hear it, but from the look on everyone's faces, it was a good one. You smiled and held up a notebook like a scorecard with a 9.0 written on it. I was too shocked and embarrassed to respond. I hope they meet up.
That's awesome.
Do you have a fart alert on your Craigslist? What's going on?
That's awesome.
I might. This dude, I see this is the title, Lady and Judge Judy Audience. So I'm like, oh, he went to a taping and he saw someone he liked. Yet no, he's just watching her on TV taking screenshots of her. And he said, I need to know who this extremely adorable woman is. Every time she's on the show in the audience, she's all I can focus on. Although I couldn't get any screenshots of her smile. She is an amazing one. I hope she sees this and responds. You're just looking at a girl on TV in a background, sir.
That's baloney.
Okay.
It doesn't make sense.
All right. Well,
I'm sorry. I don't know why you hate love, Allie, but I also hope that one works.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, what an amazing meet story that would be, right?
Yeah.
They got together?
Right. This one, whew, this guy just reads like a big old walking actually. Good girl. Bad morning, WeHo. I saw you this morning leaving for work. You were arguing with your man friend. He really had you steaming. I pulled over and told you, whatever happened, let it go. Try to have a nice day. It took you a second, but then you looked at me and smiled. Glad I could help you in this moment. Open to talking about what had you so upset. And happy to share a man's perspective. That dude has feminist written in his Twitter bio. I know it. Happy to share a man. I think she knows the man's perspective. That's what made
her
so mad.
She's pretty angry at it already.
Oh, and finally, to the crazy lady at Safeway check stand yelling about candied yams. I was in line at Safeway today. You were a few check stands over screaming for someone to help you find candied yams. I don't even know what the hell they are, but I was definitely turned on. You, 50s, 60s, crazy as S, and apparently really likes yams. Maybe we can get together sometime and candify them. I'll bring the sugar.
I bet he will.
Wow.
I bet he will.
You're welcome.
I need some babes.
Kevin Bean, this one thing I forgot to tell you, Kevin Bean. I need a woman.
Woo! I need a woman. I was in Vietnam. I definitely need a Korean woman.
My first memory is I just love the buffets in Las Vegas. I love the flan. It has a lot of sugar.
Life's a box of chocolate, Bean.
Did you get her phone number?
Yeah.
Have you called it?
Yeah, I called and she changed her number.
How about that?
Why'd you tuck away some knives behind an air conditioner vent in a nondescript bag?
No, seriously.
That's not mine, man. I drank your milkshake.
Well, I'm sorry.
Why not, Bean? This is America.
Woo! And now the further adventures of Doto. International man of mystery, man. Yeah.
For the first time in 2018, Doto, welcome back to the Kevin Bean Show.
Happy New Year's, Kevin Bean. How's it going?
To you as well. It's going
Thanks, man.
How's it going for you?
Good, man. Hey, you're going to... I know Dave told you about the matchmaking stuff.
The matchmaking, yes. Yeah, tell us about this. You're looking for a lady online now, right?
You're going to want to hear this, Kevin Bean. I know this matchmaker, he's been doing this for 30 years. He's based up in the Monterey Park, right, Kevin Bean?
Okay, right, yes. Okay.
And then I've talked to him since 2012, and every now and then I do... But he asked me, why the hell have you wouldn't you get serious and sign up, right?
Right. Uh-huh. So did you
and
sign
what
up?
Happened? On January 5th or January 6th, I did sign up with him, and he charged like about $600 for the whole year, right?
$600?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what he did is I told him, and he was having me looking at profiles of ladies. Like, he has books from age-wise, from 20 to 30, and from 30 to 40, and from 40 to 50, right?
Right. Sure.
And I look at and I choose between the 20 to 30 and between the 30 to 40, right?
Okay.
And then he asked me to please list 20 different girls, 22 different girls I was interested in. And out of the 20 girls, 22 girls, I list about 20, right?
Okay. Okay. It's a pretty high rate, but go ahead.
And then he gave me two girls. One girl, she's 31 years old, right?
Okay.
And she's a banker. And then the other girl, she's 39 years old, and she has a six-year-old daughter, and she's divorced, right?
Okay.
And
where's all this going, Doe?
Where's all this going?
Yeah, your story.
Yeah, because I went out with one of them, Kevin Bean.
You went out with which one?
Which
you
one?
You went on a date. Okay.
Yeah. I went out with a 39-year-old Bean.
Okay. All right. Well, tell us about it. How did it go?
It went pretty well. And then her name is Christine,
uh-huh.
and she's from China, Beijing, right?
Right.
And she used to work for IBM for 8 years in China, right?
Okay.
And after that, she used to work as a translator for the centralized government.
Okay.
At the top level government, right?
Right.
Wow.
So what do you think? So do you think it's going to work out? You think she's too intellectual for me, Kevin? What do you think? I mean,
I know she's too intellectual for me.
Well, yeah, the thing is that I did talk to her, and we had a good time.
Okay.
But the matchmaker told me that, dude, don't ask her too many personal questions about who she knows in top leadership, who she knows in government. All the guy just told me, hey, if she barely knows, you know, just don't ask
I mean, that's probably good advice to start.
I think
play it cool, Doto.
Absolutely. Yeah, and by the way, Do, if you can pause, if you can just take a breath for just 1 second so we can get a word in edgewise. There's nothing wrong with dating a really, really smart woman. That's just a bonus on top of everything else.
Yeah. Here's the problem. If she has a kid, and I've never been married, if I don't have any kids, do you think that's going to be a disadvantage on my part being?
I think that's completely up to you. I don't know how you feel about children. I don't know how involved you're going to be. I think it's a little too early for you to worry about that because you don't know. Okay, sorry to talk.
Yeah, I know, but if she and I, we would not be, and if she always takes her 6-year-old person, if she's always taking her 6-year-old daughter, do you think that's going to be awkward?
You mean if she brings her 6-year-old on dates with you?
She did.
Yes, that's...
No, she did?
She did.
Doto, what?
What? So on your first date, she brought her daughter?
On the first date, she did, but on the second and on the third, she did, Kevin.
Wait, you had a second date?
Yeah, I did.
Come on!
Doto, everybody. Well, so how do you feel about her? Do you feel like there is potential in this relationship, though?
You know what? Let me just give it a month and see how it goes, Kev. And me, but I'm also seeing I might be seeing other people too, Bean.
Okay. Wow. Look at Doe. Spreading it around. How about that? All right. Well, look. Here's what I'm going to say, guys, and tell me if you disagree. We've had a nice, fun, short conversation with Doto. We got some good information. What do you guys think about leaving it here and then maybe checking in with him in a week or so and seeing how it's going?
I'll talk to Dave about it. Him and I will. I'll keep him in contact with him.
All right. Okay. I wasn't asking you, Doe. I was asking the room. Okay. How do you guys feel about us tabling this for now?
I'm fine with that as long as Doto tells us he'll come back on in a week and give us an update.
Hey, Bean, if me and her decide to go to Seattle, can we visit you, Bean?
Yes, you can.
Absolutely.
You're kidding.
No, you can totally visit me.
Yes, you can visit me in Seattle because I moved away from there a year and a half ago, Doe. All right, we love you. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Doe.
Thanks, Kevin Bean.
Bye, Doe.
Doto, international man of mystery, man. Yeah.
Of the CBS Evening News, Allie, we've talked about it before. I know that a lot of people don't need a newscast like that anymore in the age of the internet. But I enjoy it.
I enjoy Steve Hartman. All of his stories are some of my favorites.
Yes, he does a great job. In fact, I'm not sure if this was a Steve Hartman story or not, but I did see Rishi Sharma's story on the CBS Evening News recently, and it blew me away. He is 20 years old, and he has essentially dedicated his life to this nonprofit that he runs called Heroes of the Second World War. He is on a mission to do in-depth filmed interviews with World War II combat veterans while they're still alive. Because let's face it, World War II ended like 70 years ago or something like that. So these guys are getting near the end, and we're losing a bunch of them every single day. And Rishi has taken it upon himself to get their stories down on tape. It's a fascinating story for such a young man. Again, only 20, and he joins us on the phone right now. Where are you, in Colorado, Rishi?
Yes, sir.
Hey, we appreciate you jumping on. We know how busy you are. I was so blown away by your story for so many different reasons, but why don't you tell me where the idea came from? Hey, I need to get some cameras and some microphones in front of these veterans.
Well, in all honesty, you know, ever since I was a little kid, I've always been interested, you know, in history and World War II. And, you know, I don't know what little boy, you know, didn't play Army and that kind of stuff. But for me, you know, my heroes weren't like sports celebrities or athletes or, you know, musicians. It was always the World War II combat veterans because they literally saved the world. So I used to, you know, read books about the war, and I started, you know, calling up the veterans who would be featured in these books. And it was such an amazing feeling to actually talk to this real-life hero who I just looked up on the internet and who got his phone number and read him the passage in a book about him and hear his thoughts about, you know, what happened. But if I wanted to get in touch with some kind of useless person like the Kardashians, I would have to go through like a million people. And I realized, you know, these heroes are all among us. So when I was in high school, I started riding my bike to the local nursing and senior homes. You'll meet with these veterans because every single retirement community, which, you know, there's practically one in every city, they all have these World War II veterans. And I just I started interviewing them, and I loved it so much that I started ditching class to go do it because I would learn more talking to them than I was in school. And when I graduated, I realized, you know, this is what I want to do. And I decided to not go to college or anything. My mission is to meet and interview 2 to 3 World War II combat veterans a day till the last one passes away. And I've just been driving across the states doing that since. I've been to, like, I think 43 or 44 of the states now.
Wow. I've done just over 850 interviews.
I'm sorry, how many interviews, Rishi?
Just over 850.
Oh, wow. Gosh.
It's unbelievable. And where did you grow up? What town did you grow up in?
Agoura Hills, California.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you were riding your bike, and then when you got your license, you started driving everything within a day's distance. And then at some point, you just hit the road and kind of made this your full-time thing, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it just got bigger and bigger. You know, at first, I was just, you know, riding my bike to go meet the veterans, and then the local paper did a story, and people started calling me, saying, you know, my dad's a World War II veteran, or, you know, my grandpa's a World War II veteran, and I just kind of kept expanding my radius, and I kept doing interviews in California, and then eventually the Associated Press picked up the story, and that went national, and that's what led to Steve Hartman and CBS.
And what I love about this is you're filming all of these, and it's essentially living history, and you're giving copies of this to their family, so then they can pass it down from generation to generation, because these stories are eventually going to be lost if you don't do this.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's so important that these veterans get interviewed, you know, while we have the technology, you know. Mm-hmm. What's crazy to me is if a Civil War veteran came out of the grave, you know, all the news media would be begging him for an interview just for like 5 minutes of his time. And they'd be mm-hmm. using the nicest cameras and the fanciest equipment, and they'd be on their knees begging. But what boggles my mind is we have that opportunity with the World War II veterans, who are undoubtedly way cooler. And people, you know, are taking selfies. And, I mean, I just feel that we have the technology, we have yeah. the know-how, and we have the means. It's so easy to find the veterans nowadays. You know, it's so easy transportation-wise to go meet them that people could be using, you know, their iPhones and their cameras to actually, you know, as a tool to capture history so that 200 years from now, people won't have to wonder what it was like for the World War II veterans. They'll understand what it's like to grow up in the Great Depression, you know, lie about your age and go into the service because you wanted to fight, to see your friends getting killed around you, to have to go kill people, you know, after 3 or 4 years of that, then to come home and be told just to man up and move on, because post-traumatic stress wasn't diagnosed back then. Sure. You know, they thought you were, you know, being a coward if you were scared. And they just went on to lead incredible lives, you know. They right. literally created the pillars of our society.
We are talking to Rishi Sharma here on the Kevin DeBean Show. He's the founder of the Heroes of the Second World War, heroesofthesecondworldwar.org. You've done more with your life before 21 than the rest of us listening to you have done in our whole lives. It's an unbelievably moving thing that you're doing. And on behalf of the America, we thank you for that. We thank you for putting in the work to do this. Before I let you go, sir, is there a place that people can see or hear the interviews you've conducted?
Yeah, you know, what I would ask is, you know, if people can, you know, take the time and visit the nonprofit's website, Heroes, H-E-R-O-E-S, of the Second World War, all spelled out, .org. There are interviews on there, and there's also interviews on a YouTube channel called Heroes of the Second World War. But what I really would request is anyone listening, if you know or you think you may know any World War II combat veterans, please reach out. My contact information is on the website. It's under Contact Us. I'm more than happy to try to get them interviewed. And even if you don't want me to interview them, please consider, you know, going and visit your grandpa, you know, today or tomorrow, or your father, and use your phone and just record them, because when they're gone, they're gone.
Rishi, thank you for making time to jump on the Kevin DeBean Show today, and thank you for what you're doing. We really appreciate it, and you're inspiring a lot of people.
Well, I really appreciate you guys taking the time, and the last thing I'll say is just, whoever is listening, please realize, you know, as tough as life gets today, you know, it really pales in comparison to what these heroes went through so that we can have a chance at life. And if you meet a veteran, you know, from any war or any conflict, just please let them know that you're grateful for your freedom and that you have an opportunity to wake up in a house that's not bombed out, or that you can go up to anyone and you can say whatever you want without any fear of repercussion, or that you can dream about what you want to do with your life 30, 40 years down the road, because that's such a blessing. And real people, 17, 18, 19-year-old kids, you know, they didn't give up their lives, but their lives were taken. And they never got an opportunity, you know, to really have kids or raise a family or
sure.
do what they wanted to do.
We'll talk to you again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Well, we're a piece of crap.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. To live, right?
I'm just going to go ahead and kill myself today.
I wouldn't do that. But no, he brings up such a good point. They are all over the place.
Right.
Nursing homes, retirement centers. And you know what? They just want to talk.
Yeah, exactly. That's great stuff. And we'll put up the link to Rishi's site on all of our Kevin and Bean social media.
It's the world famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ. And this is the Kevin and Bean Show.
We talked to a remarkable young man, a Southern California man named Rishi Sharma. And he has made it his life's mission to drive around the country. Can't rent a car, can't fly someplace to rent a car because he's not 21 yet, he told us. But he's driving around the country and he's interviewing World War II veterans while they're still alive. He knows that they are living, walking history. They've got a story to tell and he wants to get it out on tape before we lose them all. And then Omar reminded us that Beer Bug was way ahead of his time in interviewing a World War II veteran. He's at the red carpet of what film, Muggs?
This was the first Captain America that came out. I believe it was like 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Louis Zamperini is there, who is not only a World War II veteran, he's one of the most famous World War II veterans of all because they even made a movie about him called Unbroken. This is a guy who was an Olympic distance runner. He ran for the United States in the 1936 Berlin Olympics. He was a World War II bombardier whose plane crashed and he spent like 3 months in the water, right? Like drifting through shark-infested waters before he finally gets picked up, and then he gets put into a Japanese prison camp where he is tortured and starved for 2 years. All right? They made a movie about this man's life.
My God.
As awful as all that was, talking to Beer Mug on this red carpet must have felt worse.
Can I just, before we play it... for those listening, I have nothing but respect for... every veteran of war.
Well, that shows in this interview.
Yeah, World War II especially. But I just want people to know that I wasn't trying to be a dick. I was trying to be funny, which I'm clearly not. Now, let's just listen. Mr. Louis Zamperini, a veteran of World War II. How you doing, sir?
Well, I'm doing great for my age.
Yeah, you look fantastic. I was surprised to hear that an actual World War II vet was at the Captain America world premiere. And let me ask you, besides, you know, getting a victorious win over the Axis powers, how was it like fighting with Captain America himself?
All right, stop right there, please. You can tell that you didn't have, and this is my favorite thing about Muggs when he does interviews, he starts a question and he has no idea how it's going to end.
I mean, I hear
the wheels turning.
And by the way, no preparation on this, like I do. Mm-hmm. And so the publicist for Mr. Zamperini comes up and he says, would you like to interview a real-life World War II veteran?
Yeah.
Like, sure. Yeah, he's a track right. He's winning the Olympics. And yeah. He, you know, I was like, absolutely, bring him by.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing anything about him.
Right.
Was your question really, what was it like fighting with Captain America? I mean, did you think that the movie was real and there was a Captain America that he served side by side with?
Of course not, Bean. I was just trying to, like I say, be clever and tie in the movie with the real life.
Okay. And what did you expect the 90-year-old man to come back with?
I don't know.
That's the other thing. I understand you weren't prepared to interview a veteran of World War II. But you understand that he was 95 years old at the time.
Yeah.
Why go with the complexities of the movie tie-in and the hypothetical?
Because I'm a dumbass.
Okay.
Let's hear what he said.
How was it like fighting with Captain America himself?
What was the question about?
Did you meet Steve Rogers himself?
I don't.
Captain America?
No, I don't think so, no.
That's all right. So, all right,
you doubled down on the concept, right? Which is, he obviously didn't get it. He was just lost, deer in the headlights. So you thought you'd drive it home by asking it again.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
All right.
So, Mr. Zamperini, tell me what it was like being imprisoned during World War II. Okay, hold on, real quick, before he answers this question. This was a question I wanted to find out about. And it's probably touchy to ask a World War II veteran or any prisoner of war what it was like. I mean, you can obviously kind of guess what it was like, right?
But you're on the red carpet at a movie premiere. How deep and dark do you want to go with his time in a Japanese prison camp?
I mean, I clearly think I'm a legitimate journalist here, and that's what I was doing.
Right.
Tell me what it was like being imprisoned during World War II.
To get 3 rice balls a day. And that did, and they're subject to beatings almost on a daily basis.
That is amazing. Three rice balls a day, subject to daily beatings. I mean, if you've seen the movie Unbroken, you see what he went through. And my response is, that is amazing.
Well, because Muggs loves rice.
I hate myself.
Here's the opening paragraph of this article from Bustle.com. When it comes to infidelity, whether or not someone has cheated isn't always black and white. But now there's a new term floating around, micro-cheating. It might complicate matters even further. What is micro-cheating? It's a nifty new word used to describe all the little ways that someone might cheat on their partner without technically doing so. So you can cheat while not cheating, guys? That's what we're talking about? All right, here's the news from CBS New York.
Micro-cheating refers to a small series of actions that don't quite meet the definition for cheating.
So, for example,
frequent confiding with somebody outside of the marriage.
The micro-cheater might rationalize this as just talking to a friend. But psychologist Barbara Greenberg says this is actually a very intimate act.
The difference between a friendship and micro-cheating is friendships are usually not kept secret.
Okay, now that's the first thing that was said in this report that started to bring this into focus for me. Because if I have a conversation with a friend who happens to be a woman about anything and don't tell my wife about it, I don't think that's me cheating. That's me having a relationship with a friend, right?
Agree.
But I guess what the doc is saying is, as long as I'm not going out of my way to keep that conversation a secret, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But once all of a sudden it's special between me and this friend, now my wife's got a reason to be upset. Am I reading that correctly?
That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And do we agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear some more.
But when you're talking to somebody and keeping it secret, that starts to meet the definition of micro-cheating.
Other examples of micro-cheating, according to the experts, calling or texting a friend for information or advice on an issue that could easily be found online.
I mean, I do often text models and say, what is the population of North Dakota? You know, just because I thought they might know. Where do you suppose that one is coming from? In other words, is she suggesting that you make up excuses to have a conversation with somebody?
Exactly. It sounds like that. Yeah. Like you could find the information quicker probably by just going someplace else.
Right, but the someplace else isn't hot, Kevin. Right? That's what you're not remembering. You're not keeping that in mind. All right, let's find out what else is micro-cheating.
Giving an attractive waitress or waiter an excessively large tip.
Okay. Now, again, I break with the doctor here. If she's hot, she gets my money. I'm sorry.
No. What you mean to say, Bean, is if she's a great waitress, she gets your money.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, she's extremely competent in her very important and difficult job, and I pay her more. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. All right, is that micro-cheating? If you throw a couple of extra bucks at an attractive server, male or female, because you, I don't know, is that considered some sort of flirting or something?
I don't see it unless you're going back every lunch requesting to sit in her area.
That seems like a reach.
That's a reach.
Yeah, I would think so too. But would I guess the question the doctor might ask, kind of going back to the text conversation earlier, is would you put that extra money on the bill if you were sitting there with your girlfriend?
And the answer, of course, is yes.
that's what you like to say, right? All right, let's hear some more.
And neglecting to mention a significant other in a conversation so as to appear single on purpose.
Now, that's interesting. So you're having a conversation with somebody. You're at a party or something like that, and you talk about all these things that you did and all these places that you went, and you kind of don't mention that you did those things with your spouse maybe?
I've had guys do that, totally downplay that they're in a relationship, you're chatting at a bar or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I've watched guys put girls' numbers in phones, mm-hmm. not with her name, but like Steve, whatever. Let me get back to this later. Yeah, it's if you're downplaying your relationship in any way, shape, or form, it's probably not a good sign.
So is the way around that, if you're ever having a conversation with a member of the opposite sex that you don't know or don't know well, to like in that opening paragraph go, hey, my name is so-and-so and I'm married. I mean, is that what you're supposed to do, is like get everything out up top?
I think you're not supposed to do these micro-cheating things.
Yeah, there's a difference between being way too open about something like, hi, I'm Jim, I've been married for 8 years, or –
Hi, I'm Jim. I love to go hiking. Do you go hiking? Oh, I go hiking all the time alone. Nope, no one tied to me. I'm just Jim, real free. There's a huge difference between those two things.
I feel like you've met Jim.
I've met so many Jims, and I'm convinced I'm so many Steves and phones. Another one of them was you are totally keeping tabs of someone on their social media. Like, oh, look at what she just tweeted. Hey, did you see this picture? That
too much
over
of
time
that, yeah.
could be like, why are you so obsessed with this person's social media? So I don't think it's just every now and then. This is a gradual erosion.
And I wonder if the person who is doing that, the person who is following an ex or just following somebody that they kind of have a crush on or something that online, I wonder if in their mind they think, I'm just looking at public social media. I'm not even having any interaction with this mm-hmm. person. So yeah. how can I possibly be doing anything wrong? And I'm sorry, I think that's a defensible position.
Well, of course, because you like gaslighting right? people, Bean. That's what you do.
No, but
you
what
make
I'm saying-
the lady feel like she's crazy while you're busy manipulating.
No. I'm just saying, hypothetically, what I'm saying is if somebody is just looking at a girl, in this case, a girl's social media, what is he really doing wrong?
Yeah, I don't. There's so many of these that I'm like, calm
this
down.
This sounds questionable. Yeah, take it easy.
Yeah, if you're then sliding into the DMs like, hey, your right. hair looks great in that picture, then you're entering a different realm. But all a right. lot of this stuff is maybe calm down a little bit.
Do you think? Okay, let's take one real quick. Let's make it Deanna or Dina. I'm sorry, I don't know which. Whittier, line one, please.
Hey, Dina or Deanna.
Hi, my name's Deanna.
Okay, thank you.
I'm actually on the other side of this.
Oh.
I was the micro cheater.
Okay.
And I didn't think it was a big deal until I just...
We'll be the judge of that.
So.
Okay, so what happened?
I was having a lot of... We just had a couple kids back to back, so I was like really stressed out at home,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't want to talk to my spouse about it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, I reached out to an old friend who was...
An old boyfriend?
No.
Okay.
Never a boyfriend.
Just checking. Okay.
Never. It was completely platonic, but it still hurt his feelings once he found out because I was keeping it a secret.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You know,
so it was a secret friendship mm-hmm. because I wanted it for myself and my sanity, but...
You needed somewhere to vent about your stressful life that involved your newborn kids and your husband.
Right.
Yes.
All right, Allie, how do you feel about that?
I completely get it because we need those things. But to keep it an active secret, because I think a part of you probably, whether you wanted to admit it or not, hearing it today made you go, oh, shoot, that was what I was doing. You
mm-hmm.
you knew something would make him mad.
Exactly.
Maybe you should pick a girl to complain to.
Well, that's not micro cheating though. It's she's turning to someone for an emotional support
right.
that she's not
right.
getting from him.
Right.
Right. Just... And it like destroyed our relationship for a couple years.
Oh no!
A couple years.
Yeah.
How about now? Are things better?
It's better till an argument comes up.
Oh, and then this always comes
and
back.
Then it's on.
Yeah.
What about Chad? Remember Chad?
Was that his name? I don't know.
It's
good luck to you
really
and your
good.
Husband and your boyfriend. Natalie and Dave and Gabby and Tammy and all the rest, you hang on. We'll get to you right after this on camera. We're talking about micro-cheating now on the Kevin and Bean Show. It's not quite infidelity, but it is behavior that your partner maybe doesn't know about and certainly wouldn't approve of. Martha writes in from Whittier, 626. How about when a man invites a 20-year-old female jogger into his home to take a shower? Is that micro-cheating?
Well, I don't think so because your wife was there.
Yeah, she was.
Right?
I mean, she was tied up in the basement, but technically
sure,
he was home, right. All right, give me some Rob here in Whittier, line six. I think he's going to shed some light on this with some good observations for all of us. Hey, Rob.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, thank you.
So the whole micro-cheating thing, I think the thing we need to ask ourselves and be real about it is we all get hung up on the action, but really we've got to go back a step and look at the intent. Like, you know, if we use an example, you know, I jump on Facebook and, you know, a friend of mine, a female friend, goes on a trip to Rome and I want to look at photos of her Rome holiday, maybe to plan my own holiday,
mm-hmm.
no big deal.
Right.
You know? Friend of mine, jump on Facebook, I'm looking at her photos of her going to Rome because I'm sitting there thinking my wife's a nag and I picture what it would have been like if I'd married her instead. Micro-cheating, you know, mm-hmm. same action, different intent. And I think...
Yeah, but now aren't we getting into what's going on in someone's brain and how much should they be punished for something that is just a fleeting thought that they're not acting on?
Well, yeah, it is. Well, it's in our brain because that's where it all starts. you know, that's where it all begins. I'm sure that anyone who's, you know, like cheated or been, you know, dishonest with their spouse, it started probably with a thought or a gesture or a look or a wink, or, you know, it does start with us, and that's the only thing that we can take accountability for is our own, you know, our own thoughts and our own actions. We've got to, like, I think, get on it at the root and not let it kind of manifest. And
I totally agree with Rob. I also think for some people, intent can change. So an intent of looking at someone's pictures can then be like, hey, did you have fun in Italy? Did it? And then realize, oh, this is a really fun person. It can gradually erode.
Hey, you look
great
and you really look good in this picture in Italy.
Intent can change, but I still stand firm with, if you're going to cheat, you're going to cheat. So whether it starts off micro, then it goes to emotional, then it goes to physical, you know you're going to do it.
All
regardless.
Right, but let me throw this out
no.
there. Do we want Rob on the air with his phony accent judging us? Is that what we're looking at here?
No, what I want is a picture of Rob.
God.
What?
Wow.
Allie wants a picture of Rob.
I'm just
okay.
saying, Rob, I like
this has escalated
accent.
In a
yeah.
good direction now.
I think you know my intent, Rob.
All right, Rob, thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Natalie in Orange. She's on line two. I think.
Are we lucky that anyone ever calls us?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
I think Natalie's is a little more clear cut. That there's some nonsense going on here. Let's see if you guys agree.
Hey, Natalie.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you. Micro cheating.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is or isn't. My boyfriend of 5 years. Yeah, we live together. He goes down to the local Toys R Us for adults, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says he has these two girls helping him pick out, you know, the perfect toy to bring home and the lotion, blah blah blah. So he comes home with a bag. I saw the bag. He's like, hey, I got something for you later. I'm like, hey, good times, right? He goes, oh, I'll be right back. And he leaves the house again. So I later found out that the girls were so helpful that he took them a pizza. Is that micro cheating?
Took them they weren't helpful as much as they were hot. That's what was happening.
Took them a pizza.
He took them a pizza for lunch.
And
I'm just
by,
like, wow, that's
by,
pretty nice of you.
Yeah, by you saying I found out later, did he tell you?
Yeah, he told me the next day that these girls were really helpful. How'd you like it? I'm like, yeah, I had a good time last night. I really liked that one lotion. And he's like, yeah, these girls were so helpful that I went and took them a pizza.
Well, if he told you he took them a pizza, then to me that's not micro-cheating at all.
He's not bringing ugly chicks at Nordstrom that helped him pick out a sweater, a pizza.
No, well, not that I know of, but
he probably is.
You know, now the running joke is, hey, babe, I'm a little low on some lotion. Can you take them down to the KFC and see if you can come back
with? Well, it sounds like you're handling it just right, Natalie. Thanks for that.
Are there any words that give you the heebie-jeebies?
Yes.
Words you'd be willing to say out loud?
Moist.
Really? You're a moister.
Nope, I am not. I hate that word.
Why?
I can't. It's just, no.
But have you ever stopped to think about why? Why does that one word give you the heebie-jeebies?
Yeah, because it's gross.
Why is it gross?
I don't want to explain to you why it's gross, Bean, but trust me, it's gross.
Well, maybe this news report will help make some sense of it.
It's the word that everyone hates. It sends shivers down people's spines and makes their face cringe. Why does this one word evoke such an intense reaction? Why is the word that shall not be said moist?
Why do you say it like that? Oh, my God.
Moist.
No.
Well, now I don't even have to go on with this story. Now I can just play.
Moist.
All right. So they have done research into why that word, more than any other word, is the word.
Oh,
and by the way, you're going to be surprised to hear. What do you think the percentage is of people who feel like you do, Allie, that have a problem with that word?
I'd say over 50. So let's go 63.
You say 63. And again, if you're just joining us, we're talking about
moist. Whoa.
All right, let's find out.
Moist psychologically is a very loaded word. According to a research study conducted by psychology professor Dr. Paul Thibodeau, around 18% of American English speakers...
18%!
Huh.
That's all it is. So the vast majority of people are completely fine with that word, but those people who hate it are pretty vocal about
and
it.
And I don't think they've heard him say it.
Yes, the way he says it might up that number considerably.
Hate the word moist. And the hate behind moist stems from words association.
When I think of the word moist, other words I think of are sponge, sticky, thick.
Go on.
Yeah, you know, I kind of start thinking of, maybe some, like, bodily fluid type of grossness, maybe some, like, sweatiness, or I don't want to use the word discharge, but I just said discharge.
Sure. My God, it's too early for this, Bean.
He's not making it any better, is he? Is that the problem with you? Is the association with bodily functions? Is that your moist problem?
Yeah.
It is okay?
The word moist is fine. I don't care about the word moist. I've never hated it. Dr. Thibodeau looked into three hypotheses. Maybe it was the way moist is pronounced that disgusts people. Or possibly it's the word's connotation that makes people cringe. Or it could be that people are simply jumping on the cultural trend that moist is a gross word.
By the way, I think there's a lot of that going on. I think moist is one of those things, like people who say they're afraid of clowns because other people are afraid of clowns. I don't think they have any problem with moist, but they know that that's the thing to not like is moist. I honestly believe there's a lot of bandwagoning going on.
Moist clowns.
Moist clowns are the best clowns. I also don't know why this psychological study has to have this dance bed underneath it. I don't know why.
It's very peppy.
I don't know why everything has to have music on it, but it does on the internet.
I don't hate the word moist because other people hate the word moist. I'm perfectly capable of hating my own things all by myself.
Participants were asked what they thought of the word moist when grouped together with other words like phlegm and vomit and words related to sex. Dr. Thibodeau also asked what they thought of the words that sound like moist, like foist and hoist and rejoice.
Now, how about that, Allie? Do you have any problem with hoisting and foisting?
No, why would I? They don't...
But they sound so much like moist, though. Well, let's find out.
Foist is an awesome word. Hoist is the awesome word. Rejoice is an awesome word.
I know. I don't mind those words. I think hoist is a word that is necessary in conversation sometimes.
When was the last time anyone used the word hoist?
Monday.
Oh, really? All right.
I'm going to hoist the result that over suggested my head.
Is that what you said? Yeah. You actually used it in a sentence? Okay, no. That's fine.
The result suggested that people don't like the word moist because of its connection to body fluids and functions and phlegm and vomit. But that's not all. The study also found there was a bandwagoning effect happening.
Okay, here you go.
When researchers showed two groups, two different videos, one where male celebrities are awkwardly saying the word moist.
All right, now here's going to be the key that's going to break you of your dislike for the word moist. Listen to what they showed the second group. The first group is celebrities awkwardly saying the word moist. Here's what they showed the second group.
And one where moist is being used to describe cake.
Boom! When you hear the word moist, Allie.
You really think you healed me?
Yes.
No.
You don't think phlegm. You don't think discharge. You think cake.
I recently had a server describe the cake as the moistest cake they've ever had. And I was like, I'm out.
But that's a delicious piece of cake right there. Moist cake is the best cake.
Well, moist cake can be something else, too.
Oh, no.
Only the group that watched the first video reacted negatively.
I sort of feel like if there is a bandwagon, something is genuinely wrong with that word.
Don't jump in the bandwagon. If all your friends jumped off the word moist, would you...
There you have it.
Okay, so there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The scientific survey on the word moist, 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 moist.
I don't know that I can support a Golden Knights hat. I'm not sure that that's a thing.
John Taffer can wear whatever he wants, by the way. That's what I'm saying. He is an award-winning hospitality expert, best-selling author, highly respected management guru, and, of course, the host of Bar Rescue on the Paramount Network. Formerly Spike, welcome back, John. How are you?
Good to be here, man. It's been a while.
Sorry that Kevin is starting by throwing shade at your hockey team, but you are very enthusiastic about your Golden Knights.
He threw a little shade, but he gave a little credit, too, and I thought it was a reasonable conversation, not a fanatical one.
Right. It's an amazing thing they did for a first-year team.
It is.
Did past tense.
Yeah, and we're having a lot of fun. We're hanging in there. The three in a row is, I think, our biggest losing trend, actually. You guys
That's
kicked
amazing.
Our butts.
Really
yeah,
is.
I mean,
we were just talking to Luke Robitaille about this a few days ago on the show, and he's marveling like the rest of us are. You just don't see this in sports. You just don't.
It's good for Vegas. I just remember we had the shooting.
Yeah.
And the season started at home literally a week later.
Oh, wow.
So, you know,
Vegas as a sports
city?
City, yeah.
It's great. We're excited about the Raiders. Big time. So, you know, we feel that we're going to have an NBA team within the next couple of years.
Is that right?
So it's what's interesting about the hockey team is two things. One, we sold out season tickets.
Right.
So it was really participation. But unlike other cities, about 30% of the people in the arena are from the opposing team. Because they come to Vegas for the weekends.
Sure.
So you see the red jerseys, the Kings jerseys. So I must say, and you're going to give me a kick for this, when you win with 30% of the opposing fans there, it's really sweet.
Sure, of course.
I never thought about how smart that is to put a team in Las Vegas because so many people will travel there from everywhere else. I mean, you're going to sell a lot more tickets that way.
And it's working. And a lot of people that said it wouldn't, but you see it. The hotel rooms are being sold. You see the opposing jerseys, and it's... it's fun. Come to Vegas and see your team.
It helps that the team's doing so well, too.
Yeah. Well, we saw you were having a book coming out, which, by the way, is available March 13th, wherever books are sold online or in stores, called Don't BS Yourself, Crush the Excuses That Are Holding You Back. I will tell you that I was surprised at first, but then I realized that every time Bar Rescue is on, my social media feed is filled with people who are like, John is the OG. John is the guy who gets it done. John is the guy who makes people do things. I mean, you have that reputation already, and people know that from you, from television, seeing you whip people into shape when they think they can't be whipped into shape.
Yes. Sometimes I believe in them more than they believe in themselves, actually. And this book is sort of that. This has become a labor of love. This has really been quite an experience for me. I just shot my 160th Bar Rescue. 160. Think of the depth of failure that I've experienced. He's shaking your head at 150 episodes.
Wow.
So I have seen such failure that most people, I mean, let's talk radio business. You talk about what's successful, how to be successful, what you do to be successful, the blocks of success, steps of success. I know more about failure than anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Because these people can't afford to buy me lunch, nonetheless.
Yeah. Right.
You know, to have somebody who does what I do.
You've seen a lot of people go bankrupt, right?
I have. So I thought to myself, after about 120 of these things, I found the common denominator of failure, and it's so freaking easy. It's just an excuse. Mm-hmm. You see, if you wake up tomorrow and blame the president, the government, the weather, the economy, the this, the that, you have no reason to change because it's not your fault. It's that son of a gun
right.
who's ruining it for me. Mm-hmm. But if you wake up in the morning and blame yourself, then you're going to get angry and you will change.
So that's the biggest issue that you run into going into bars?
Excuses.
It's not me. It's got to be.
Yeah. So I went on this quest and I defined the word excuse. This is cool. The word excuse is nothing but, in essence, a rationalization of a mistake.
So you're making a mistake and you're just rationalizing it
away. Or you wouldn't
away.
Say the excuse.
Yeah.
There's no purpose for an excuse if you're not rationalizing a mistake.
But, John...
So the book destroys every excuse.
Okay.
And when you're done, I leave you with nothing. What are you going to do then? You have to act.
There must be people, though, who are doing all the right things who are still not successful, though. Right?
That, I find
there is
that...
a certain amount of... There's luck involved. Sometimes, right? There's bad breaks involved sometimes that aren't your fault.
Of course. I'm going down to Puerto Rico to do two hurricane-impacted bars. So, of course, we have those types of things. Mm-hmm. But honestly, if you open in a smart location and you do everything correctly, you rarely fail. If it's your first time, then you're going to make a lot of mistakes, but the failure is based upon the mistakes. Interestingly, the first time people go into the bar business, success is about 1 of 12.
Oh, wow.
If you go out the second time, it's going to be 1 of 3.
Is
because
right?
you don't make those mistakes again.
Yeah.
Right.
So the
right.
same person's statistics are so much better the second time out. So that's a factor. So I agree there are people who do everything right. But, you know, what is right? Are they doing it right for them? Are they doing it right for their customers?
Right.
Whose music are they playing? Mine or theirs? Who is so there's a lot of ways to interpret right.
In the beginning of your book, you talk about your mom passing away. And it seemed like a pretty heartfelt apology and – you were using excuses to not talk to her.
Yeah. And you know, 5 years later, you realize what an idiot you are.
You hadn't talked to her for 5 years.
Yeah, wow. For 5 years. Now, that was many years before she passed, so that was old news. But, you know, you look back at it, you say to yourself, that's 5 years of my life. I will imagine if
and what was it? Do you remember?
I don't. I honestly don't remember what it was. That's why it's such BS to you know, go through that. And we think about it. Think of all the people in life who we've disconnected with that meant something to us. Mm-hmm. We don't even know why we disconnected with them anymore.
Yeah.
And these excuses get in the way. So there's great excuses that came up time after time. Fear is one. Right? I'm scared to do
fear.
It. I'm scared to do it. I'm scared. I'm scared. But everybody else did it in the same situation. What are you scared of? So then those situations, you know, I have more confidence than they do. Then the other one is circumstance. Well, you know, I can't overcome the weather. I can't overcome this. Mm-hmm. I opened a bar in Seattle. You know that market pretty well. Mm-hmm. Years ago, and every outside deck, and everybody said to me, you can't open bars outside in Seattle. It rains every freaking day here. So I put these metal poles in the deck that umbrellas slipped into, and you could walk around and carry your umbrellas. It was one of the coolest happy hours in Seattle. So you know, there's ways to overcome and do things. So then there's fear, circumstance, resources. I don't have the money. I don't have the time. Time is a great one.
Sure.
I'm sorry. I would have done this, but I don't have the time. But you sat on social media for 3 hours this morning.
Yeah.
Man. You have the time. You're just not using the time, right?
I will. I bet that's got to be at the top of most people's list of
poor time management is what holds so many of us back, right?
Big time. I mean, and we do. You know, we wake up.
I used to see the people who used to complain that they don't have time to work out. And then I'd see Barack Obama in the gym every single morning. And I was thinking, you know what? The guy's the freaking president of the United States of America. And he somehow has time to work out. I think we all have time to work out.
I think so, too.
You
know,
is that when you started working out, Bean?
I started getting so buff. Yeah.
And I imagine that ego plays a huge role in all of this as well.
Yeah. And ego gets in the way hugely. And, you know, I want to remove a wall, and it's like I'm removing their child.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a personal connection to what they do. But then, you know, to me, ego is an interesting thing. How much ego can you have when you have an empty wallet?
Yeah, true.
Right? So it becomes a very false ego. So he who puts their ego before their wallet has no ego at all. So, you know, ego is defined on success and being someone. In our society, when you are someone and you attain success, you have at least a few dollars in your wallet. You're not losing $500,000 a year.
Right.
You are. So I have to teach them, you know, how moronic it is to sit there with an empty wallet and suggest that you're God.
I'm sad that we're out of time, but you have sold yourself a book right here, John. I can't wait to read this thing. So March 13th, available wherever books are sold. You can go to johntaffer.com right now if you want to pre-order. Go to Amazon, go to Barnes & Noble, wherever you get your books. Can't wait to read it, man. Sounds fascinating. Thank you so much for stopping back by.
Great to see you guys.
You guys are with me. You look around the world and you think, what do we need more of? And the answer is hate, right?
Said it for years.
For years you've been saying it, right, Allie? Well, finally, there's somebody who agrees with you. We brought you this story a couple weeks ago when we heard that this was going to be launched, and it is now available for iOS in the App Store and Apple, available in the Android for spring. We're talking about a dating app called Hater App, haterdater.com. So in other words, you hate the Patriots because you're a good American.
Right.
How much fun would it be to go on a dating app where you could find somebody else who hates the Patriots? You already have that major thing in common that you can spend a lot of time on that first date talking about why they're awful. It's a genius idea, and we wanted to hear more about it, so we asked Dave if we could talk to the founder and CEO of the Hater app, and his name is Brendan Alpern. He's very kind to join us on a busy day today to talk to us about it. How are you, Brendan?
Go Patriots.
Thank you.
Oh, how dare you.
I love you. Are you single?
I hate Tom Brady, though. So
do I. I don't like his politics, but my God, what a comeback. Who's with me?
All right. I feel like we're off topic now. We got off on the wrong foot with Brendan, I'll tell you that.
I really wanted to like this dude.
Yep. Well, I know you've been telling this story a lot, but if you would do our listeners the honor by explaining where this idea came up with of matching people not on the fact that they love long walks on the beach, but on the fact that they hate long walks on the beach. Where was the brainstorm happening, Brendan?
Sure. So I worked in finance for a number of years, and I hated it. So I quit, and I decided I was going to be a comedy writer, actually. And Hater was an idea for, like, a comedy sketch. Obviously, it's a pretty funny idea, the dating app that matches people based on what they hate. But the more I thought about it, the more I became obsessed with it, and I did some research and found some science that actually showed that, you know, hating the same things brings people together, and it does so more than liking the same thing. So, you know, I just decided to go for it.
It makes sense. I mean, especially considering politics right now. If you like Donald Trump, you love Donald Trump. If you don't like him, you hate him. And maybe that's an important thing that you might fight about later if you didn't know ahead of time.
Yeah, wouldn't you want to know that up front?
Same with God. Same with children. There's a lot of stuff, right?
Right. Yeah.
Allie hates them all.
Brendan, when we saw the first article that came out on this a couple of weeks ago, I remember that it indicated that the 2016 presidential election was the thing that most people volunteered that they had strong feelings of dislike about. But I was surprised by some of the other things that are most commonly swiped on that they hate. One of them was hair in the drain.
It's very unpopular amongst men, actually.
That's shocking that's that big of a problem.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess who likes it, though, to be honest?
Yeah, right. That's true. But for most people, it's just a minor inconvenience. It's not really it's not their driving force in life, you know?
That's what I thought, too. But some people are just generally just disgusted by it. I was surprised myself.
Interesting. One of the things that I thought was really fun, and this article that I read mentioned that there were people who had gotten the, you know, test versions of the app, and it was almost like a party game to go through and look at all the categories, and it really got people talking and stuff. And you had, at the time, it seemed like a couple of thousand different categories that people could choose, right?
Yeah, we have around 2,500 categories, and we add new ones every day. So we try to add, like, trending ones, whatever's in the news today. We'll try to throw it in there.
I couldn't find Taylor Swift. Is that in there someplace?
Taylor Swift is actually in there twice.
Okay,
twice.
Good. Hold on a second here.
Good man.
You can rate her as a person.
Yep.
And then you can rate her as an artist.
Love it.
People were complaining that they felt differently.
You're doing good work.
I am so hurt because, A, she's wonderful, and, B, how dare you.
Similar as an artist, though. I mean, or both.
Both.
What are the, what are the restrictions? I imagine that it would be easy for this to get ugly if people start bringing up, I don't know, religion or looks, or I mean, I imagine there's some things you keep out, right?
Yeah, we decide off the topics, and we take a hard stance against any sort of bigotry or discrimination. We don't let any sort of topics in there that hate on religions or types of people or anything like that. But eventually, we will want to have user generated topics, but we're going to moderate those carefully to make sure.
Yeah, I think you have to. You can't have anything be user generated in 2017.
Exactly.
It's just too dangerous.
Not in this day and age.
So is the rest of, I mean, the hater aspect of it is what's getting the attention, but is the rest of it more of a conventional dating app? Like you swipe on something, they swipe on something, and then you start exchanging information, then it goes private?
Exactly, yeah. So the way that it works is you swipe on all of these topics, and people have tons of fun with that, as you mentioned, at parties or with friends. But then once you've kind of gotten tired of that, you switch over to the people mode, and it crunches all that information together and finds the people who are most compatible with you. And then it works kind of like Tinder, where you're swiping left and right on people. But the big difference is that you can go in and see every single thing that they hate and every single thing that they like beforehand. And so you don't have to go on three dates with someone to figure out if they're a Trump supporter or if they're a Tom Brady supporter or whatever.
Right.
That's genius.
Cause I mean, you could match like with that many things, you could match like 40 things with somebody, and you will have found your soulmate at that point if you hate that many things together.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, sweet hate.
People are more honest about what they hate too. You know, a lot of people say like, oh yeah, I love surfing and I love going to the gym and staying healthy. And, people just kind of say that because it makes them look good. But when you say you hate something, you're really honest about it. You're not going to lie about that.
All right. Before we let Brendan go, I love this so much. Listen to some of the categories, by the way, that I think Brendan volunteered that surprised him. Butt selfies is one. The fact that Mick Jagger is still having kids is a thing that you guys can get together and decide.
Right?
When Starbucks butchers your name. Wishbones. Now, are there really people out there, Brendan, that feel that strongly about wishbones?
You'd be surprised. There's no topic in here that nobody doesn't hate. Like, everyone hates every single topic.
That's crazy. All right. So the Hater app is available in the App Store for Apple now, Android in the spring. It's haterdater.com and on Twitter at LoveThroughHate. I hope this is a big success for you, Brendan, and I hope you make a ton of money. And we appreciate you joining us on the Kevin Beach Show.
Anytime. It's my pleasure.
Gene Simmons, you guys, back in the news. Allie, you got to hate this dude, right?
I have actually done a ton of live shots with Gene Simmons.
You have? Mm-hmm.
Couldn't have been more respectful. Mm-hmm. Couldn't have been more kind. Mm-hmm. Couldn't have been more lovely.
Right.
Really?
I understand that is not a lot of women's
not typical
situation with him.
Right.
I
force
get
you to
that.
Sit on his lap?
Nope. But from where I'm standing, he was so lovely to me and would request that I was always the reporter when he had different things coming up.
That
sounds creepy right there, but yeah.
It's so nice to hear,
but no,
though.
He was honestly one of my favorite people to interview.
Not
so
right.
When I would hear new stories coming out, I was like, oh, am I ugly? I mean, what?
Why doesn't he like sound like the guy I know? Well, Gene Simmons, as you know, we've laughed about it many times over the years on this show, is the ultimate businessman. There's almost no product you can think of that Kiss hasn't already figured out a way to make money off of. Everything from alcohol to coffins. I mean, there's a Kiss something. And Gene Simmons also is turning into quite a book factory. He's got one book that just came out in the fall. He's got another book coming out next fall. So we thought we'd find out what's going on with Gene Simmons, the legendary singer and bass player for the band Kiss, who joins us on K-Rock right now. Hey, Gene, how are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Bean. Good morning, Kevin, Allie. You are all very handsome and powerful.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. So this book that's one of the bestsellers on Amazon right now is On Power, My Journey Through the Corridors of Power and How You Can Get More Power. That's a lot of uses of the word power right there in the title, Gene.
It's a very important word. And besides Gene Simmons, it's the most important word in my vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And I think that all Americans, by nature, are concerned with self-reliance and power, and, of course, being sound financially. That's right. Really what our country is based on. That's what capitalism is all about. And
yeah, you talk a lot about rich people in the book, everybody from Oprah Winfrey to Elon Musk. You say he who has the gold makes the rules. So that's primarily what this is a way for the readers to get good financial advice from somebody who's been there.
I take off the rock star mask and I put on my financial advisor mask. Mm. And speaking of masks, Allie, I'd like to put one on you.
A mask?
Right on your face.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's just close your eyes. It's a bit creamy.
Okay.
Gene.
I am a financial advisor to the people in the rock and roll world. I have been for a long time. And now I'm just transferring it over into giving the everyday citizen the ability to understand Gene Simmons' outlook on finance. You know, I just got off the phone with Johnny Zeznik from the Goo Goo Dolls, advising him on his portfolio. Speaking of goo, Allie.
Wow. Why would you say that?
What do you mean? I don't understand. I was talking about the Goo Goo Dolls.
Goo Goo Dolls, right. Okay.
Of goo, and it was on the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. What kind of advice can you give our listeners who maybe aren't making a ton of money, but they want to put something away for the future so that they don't find out they're broke at the end of it all?
Tremendous question. Tremendous question, Bean. The truth is, first, you have to take a look in the mirror and be a bit vain.
Oh.
We have this new humility that's going around. And take a second to say, I am important,
okay.
I matter, and I deserve to be very, very rich. Like I said, it's important to, every once in a while, be a little bit vain.
Okay.
Speaking of veins, right. Allie, I have something very well veined right here.
I thought we were having a conversation about money.
We were having a conversation about money and vanity and therefore vain. And I have, you
I
know
see the
I'm
progression.
Saying?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right. Allie's not used to that,
really
though.
The center of the book. That is the meat at the center of the book.
Okay.
Vanity and self-awareness. And speaking
right.
of meat.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You know what?
Mr. Meat at the center of my body.
Right. Okay.
Could we switch gears maybe? And just because we already have a little bit of time left, I mentioned that you have a whole bunch of books. So that book is already out, but later this year you have a second volume coming out as well?
That's right. In August of this year, in a much different topic, a much more serious topic, I'm writing a book called 27. And it's about all the famous celebrities, a lot of times in the rock world, which I'm a part of, that have died at the age 27.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds sort of like a bummer book.
It is a bit of a bummer, but it's a cautionary tale.
Okay.
I don't know if you know this, but Gene Simmons doesn't touch alcohol or drugs, but I've watched so many of my comrades in the rock and roll world, you know, perish to drugs and alcohol. And oftentimes it's not just addiction. It's the tremendous burden of carrying the load of a generation's culture at the age of 27. Allie.
Okay.
All right.
Speaking of carrying the load.
Okay. All right.
She is an author, an entrepreneur, a family law expert, and the divorce attorney to the stars. I am so glad, Laura Wasser, that I am meeting you in this setting and not in your office in Beverly Hills right now. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Bean would like to know if this is a result of his wife contacting you.
It is not.
Okay, it's not.
Okay.
Promise.
And are we, should we watch our words and the clock? Are we being charged by the hour as we interview you, Laura?
No, we're all good.
You don't discuss your high-profile clients, but if Wikipedia is to be believed, there's never been a divorce in America that you haven't somehow been involved in.
That's not true.
Heidi Klum, Angelina Jolie, Kim Kardashian, Ryan Reynolds, Christina Aguilera, Hillary Duff, Stevie Wonder, Britney Spears, Kate Walsh, Johnny Knoxville, Jimmy Iovine, Maria Shriver. The list just goes on and on and on and on and on. Why do you think you have so many of these people coming to you? Is it just good word of mouth?
I think it's good word of mouth. I think the other part of it is that I keep my mouth shut, so I won't even verify that all of those have been my clients. But it's public record who we've represented at the firm, and I think a lot of it does have to do with our absolutely no PR policy about those cases, and I think people appreciate that.
What's the current guess on the percentage of marriages that end in divorce, Laura, if you know?
The facts that I've been given lately when I've been out talking about it's over easy are that we're still at 50% in the U.S. and then in California we are at 60% and that California and New York State are responsible for 20% of the U.S.'s divorces.
Wow. You are kidding.
Yes. Yes.
What's wrong with us?
Wow. I mean, we're number one. But
we are number one. We are indeed. And what is the number one reason?
That I don't know.
No?
I will tell you from having practiced family law in Southern California for 23 years, I don't think it's adultery or money or whatever. I think people just grow apart and they don't communicate about it.
Yeah, so they don't take the time.
Up resentment, and people get angry at each other, and then they just go in different directions, and then they do things like have affairs or buy things that maybe they shouldn't be buying to kind of fill a hole or whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about itsovereasy.com.
Okay. So
seems like it's putting yourself out of business.
It's not, because what we realize is, as you said, most of the firm's clients are very high wealth individuals. They can afford to pay a lot of money. Most of their situations are more litigious. There's more conflict. But there are the majority of people that are going through this don't have a ton of money. They don't have, you know, very complicated situations. And if given the tools and the information, they could go and do it themselves. And so that we're giving them the tools, we're making it easier, we're helping them. And I'm hoping that at a lower cost, these people will be able to do it in a way that makes sense for them. So now we're doing more problem solving and we can really feel good about ourselves.
Now, I would imagine that one of the biggest hang-ups, one of the biggest things for the couple that's splitting to agree on is alimony. How do you work out something like that if they're going through a website? I mean, I almost feel like you do need a mediator to talk about what's a reasonable amount for spouse A to pay spouse B if alimony is involved, right?
Right. Well, but we're only in California and New York right now. We will roll out in more states as the year goes on. But not really needed.
You got California and New York covered. That's pretty much most of it.
but we have had a lot of interest from other states, so we gotta get to those guys. But there's guidelines in those states, and you base alimony, which is spousal support, on marital lifestyle and ability to pay and that kind of stuff. And as you may or may not know, our new Republican tax laws changed things at the end of 2018. So where alimony used to be tax deductible, the person who pays it gets a nice tax deduction, that will no longer be the case. So now we're all scrambling to figure out how to make these net support numbers. That's kind of been a pain for family law attorneys because we got to figure out how to negotiate them. That was a good negotiating point for us because usually the person who was getting the support was getting a little bit of a windfall, and that was helpful. So that's a bummer as far as I'm concerned, but we'll work through it. But for the site, one, there are support calculators on there, so they will help. But the other thing is
it as easy as a calculator?
Yeah. I mean, it's not a calculator, but you put things into the equation and it gives you a range. The other thing is we do have divorce coaches and mediators available to people. There's three different packages. One is $750. That's kind of just the forms and our artificial intelligence that helps you get through it. Because the reason other websites have not done well doing online divorces, these forms are really complicated. And so you can't just look at the forms and do them. So we baked into our system all kinds of great knowledge. And then there's little pop-ups of me going, hey, I guess you guys didn't know what date of separation is. Here's what it is. Because we did market research and found you buy an espresso maker. They give you a big, thick booklet of information. You never read it. You go on YouTube.
Right.
So we YouTubed me, telling people how to get through the
That's brilliant.
So, yeah, then they don't have to read. They can just look at it, and then they go,
especially
okay,
especially when legal
great.
Terms are involved, it's nice to have it explained to you. Yeah.
I mean, I did my first – I got my only divorce when I was 25, and I was already a lawyer, and I still had no idea. I mean, it's really daunting. Now imagine – English isn't your first language. I mean, it's so.
Right.
So we have really, really figured out a way to get through them easily. But as you said, Bean, it's not so easy to just come up with these numbers. And how about, you know, custody? How do you figure out what's the best custody schedule? Well, we've got all kinds of custody calendars, examples. We've got things if you plug in whatever it is, your birthday, Ramadan, Hanukkah, you plug them in and then they sync with your Google Calendar. Wow. So it's a really, really great way to work with what we now have as these modern devices to help with co-parenting. All of those things are in there. And in the higher packages, the Pro and Premier, which are $1,500 and $2,500, you get 30 minutes or 90 minutes with a mediator. So you can FaceTime them, call them, meet with them in person if you're close by and you want to have a face-to-face, and they'll help you if you hit a wall with your partner with some of the tough stuff.
And in contrast, if you each hire lawyers, what would that cost?
Well,
the average, not me,
yes. But the average in the U.S. is, we found, $20,000.
Oh, so, to get a divorce?
To get a divorce, because
are people getting married?
Well, that is a very good question. that I would ask.
Don'tgetmarried.com is our other site.
Laura, don't answer that, because I think that is a discussion that is worth having, and we have a bunch more questions. Laura Wasser is here. She is an attorney. The website is itsovereasy.com. It has nothing to do with making eggs. You guys, this is Divorce the Easy Way. More with our guests right after this on Kick.
So Allie was just giving advice and
was not
during the commercials. Is that
what
was happening?
No, I was just saying after a divorce, don't be the first one to date the guy after his divorce. Be the second, be the third, because they are a mess. Just saying. And dudes, same for you. Don't be the first after a woman gets the divorce.
Let me ask our guest, divorce attorney and family law expert Laura Wasser. Does Allie know what she's talking about?
I concur. Again, not I'm only a divorce expert, not really a dating expert, but I will say that my understanding is that you need to give these folks a little bit of time.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you end up being the therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. I want to ask you a very serious question, Laura, because we had a conversation a couple of months ago, and I said something that turned out to be controversial on the show, and people yelled at me and said I was a dum-dum. But you're the expert here, so I want to know if you think I have a leg to stand on with this opinion. Just because you get a divorce does not mean that the relationship was a mistake or a failure, is my statement.
I do not think you are a dum-dum. And I actually would like to say that that is one of the things, that's this whole philosophy that I have. And people have said like, oh, you want people to get divorced. I don't want people to get divorced. But if they're getting divorced, I want them to do it in a way that they can then not look at that relationship and feel it was a failure. I've got two kids with two different guys. I wasn't married to either of them, but I'm still really close with them. They're still my family. I still love them. I don't think that my relationships with them were a failure at all. And that's because I've got these great kids. I've got these great family members that are these guys that are my co-parents. I think if our society starts looking at divorce like Bean looks at divorce, God, this is a scary
Take
thing
it
to
easy,
say.
Right?
Wow.
You don't want to side and with Bean.
Rethink this, Laura. Rethink this.
At a societal level.
I'm going to give you a chance to just stop right there.
Hey, I can hear you guys.
Then,
you know that,
sorry,
right?
Sorry. Then I think we might be in better shape because no, I don't know that human beings were meant to mate for life. Those of you who have found your lifetime partners till death do you part, God bless you. But I think that we're seeing that that's probably not how most people go, especially when we're living so much longer mm-hmm. these days. So
I agree with that. And I'll also say to piggyback on something you said earlier, Laura, in that people grow apart sometimes because they're not the same person at 25 as they are at 50. And it's not necessarily somebody's fault.
Right.
And there's not a bad guy or a good guy or a right or a wrong. It's
you
just
sound very
Bean.
Defensive.
What are you going through?
What's happening,
that,
Bean?
Yeah,
it's
let's talk
people.
About it.
Look,
are you okay?
I am very happily married and have been for 26 years, Laura.
Is so Donna.
This isn't me. But I'm saying that people can grow apart, and it doesn't mean somebody's done anything wrong or is a bad person. It's
oh,
just
I
that
agree with all of
we
that,
We evolve.
Too.
That's
and
all.
By the way, the states that with the second highest divorce rates, because we're highest in New York and California, as I said, but some of the other really high ones are like Utah, and the reason why is young brides.
Yeah.
They get married
People
too
get
young.
Married really young,
yeah.
and then they're living longer. So after a period of time, as you said, they're totally different people.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it better for their kids to see kind of happy, evolved parents than miserable parents 100%. That are handcuffed to each other?
Yes.
Is it a lot harder, without specifying anybody, is it a lot harder for celebrities who are in the public to be friends with each other sort of in co-parent without the rumor mill starting
right.
back up again? Is that more difficult?
I don't think so.
Not
I think
really.
They can do it, and I think the ones we've seen do it have set a really good example for the rest of us in terms of the conscious uncoupling and the co-parenting that we are now seeing a trend towards. You asked me, Kevin, at the break, is the custody the hardest? It's only hard when it's hard, but most of the time it's not hard because people come in knowing, hey, I really want to share custody with my spouse, and I want to make sure my kids have exposure to both their mom and their dad.
Yeah, makes sense. We don't know these people, and you can never put yourself inside someone's house and certainly not inside someone's marriage. But just as an outsider, you look at, like, why would anyone want to divorce Brad Pitt? And the flip side of that is, why would anyone want to divorce Angelina Jolie? I mean, I really think it does shake us on the outside when we see couples that seem like they have it all split up.
Yes, I think we just, you never know.
You don't
Even
know them,
I don't
right?
know, and I hear a lot about them, but I don't know what goes on inside their homes, and you never know what happens.
Wow.
Just pausing.
Just take a breather right there.
I was thinking about if those kids can't make it.
I don't think that about anyone. Because I'll
either.
Tell you right now, I go out with my girlfriends who, oh, you look online, stoked, happy, everything's great. A couple glasses of wine, their husband sucks, they hate one of their kids. So let's just all be honest with each other, shall we?
I think that's good advice. All right, so it's overeasy.com, and it's available for anyone in California, right? They can
yes.
just go on and
and find out what they need to know and if they even need the service at all.
Absolutely. Please come check us out.
It is wonderful to catch up with you, Laurie. Didn't we have you on when your book came out back in the day?
Yes, you had us on. You had me on when the book came out. It was 2013, and I brought my son Luke with me to the studio, and Chester Bennington, may he rest in peace, was here that day.
Wow.
He had been a client of mine, so I got to introduce him to my son. So thank you for that opportunity, guys. Yes.
Well, let's not wait 5 years to have you back on, Laura. I really enjoyed this talk. Thanks so much.
Thank
all right?
you, guys.
Time for a brand new Kevin and Bean Internet Roundup.
Internet Roundup. Better turn your sound up. Internet Roundup on KRock.com. Internet Roundup. No. Better turn your sound up. Internet Roundup on KevinandBean.com.
New batch of fun viral videos all in one place at kevinandbean.com or krock.com. One you definitely need to check out is a, I guess it could be considered a road rage incident. In Florida, a guy runs into another person's car and then tries to get away, even though his car is badly damaged. But the other motorists at the intersection decide they don't want him to get away, so they get out and try to get in front of his car, try to stop his car, banging on his car, then start trying to smash out his windows with a hammer.
Okay.
Only in Florida would you see something like that.
Yeah, that guy was high and was trying to do a hit and run, and a guy came out with a sledgehammer hitting his windows.
Yeah, yeah. No word, by the way, on whether those people who attacked his vehicle are also going to be charged from their participation in that video. But they were trying to stop him from getting away with a hit and run. So it's a crazy video. You definitely need to check that out. Also, if you ever wanted to see someone solve a Rubik's Cube in less than 0.4 of a second.
What?
You definitely want to check out this internet roundup as well. All right. Here's a lady on – we got some audio for you. Here's a lady on a subway car, and she is delighted to realize she's the only passenger on the train. So she pulls out her phone and starts singing her little heart out. And at some point – and you'll hear this in the song that she's making up as she goes – she realizes, oops, there is somebody else on the train car with me. It's pretty funny.
I'm on a train car by myself. Nobody's on the train car with me. It's just me, and nobody in the seat. I put my butt in the seat, 'cause it's just me. And this is my stop, short video. Gonna get off the train that I'm on alone. Gonna pick up my bag that's sitting in the seat. On the train car, it's just me. Oh, my God, I just realized there's another person on the train. You have a good day.
Would you guys do that if you were by yourself in a train car? Would you sing? And
absolutely.
Jimmy Kimmel, speaking of killing it, has just been great on late nights. He's on fire right now, and his little on-the-street tape pieces kill me, and this is a great one. He talked to little kids in New York and Los Angeles about which city was best, which city was smartest, and these kids, well, they had some real thoughts on the subject.
Who's smarter, kids in New York or kids in L.A.?
Kids in L.A.
How come?
Because they know a lot about shopping.
What's the smartest thing you know?
That my sisters suck.
Can you name all the planets?
Volcano. Volcano. Dinosaur land.
New York.
Mercy.
Lava mountain. Mountains. There's even house.
There's one more.
New York.
Yeah, that you already said that one.
Trees.
Yes, trees. Yes.
Trees.
Can you name the planets?
Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, and Uranus. Not the planet.
Not the planet?
No, the planet, not the butt.
I love that kid. And I love the kid who instantly came up with Planet Volcano and Planet Trees.
Yeah. Dinosaur Town.
Right.
Dinosaur Town is a very popular planet. Well, it is big news for a lot of people that the Toys R Us chain is going out of business. They are declaring bankruptcy and they're going to start selling off their assets. I did not grow up in the United States, so I do not have that warm, fuzzy love that a lot of people have for Toys R Us. But how about you guys? Was it an important place for y'all when you were growing up as a kid?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The smell, it had like this certain smell, like new toys that mm-hmm. I've never smelled anywhere else.
And just the theme song. I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid.
It was sadness for me because I couldn't afford anything there.
Oh.
So. Poor.
Yeah.
A lot of people are chalking this up to just, you know, the ease of buying something online. You know, you go to Amazon and buy almost anything you can get at Toys R Us. But others are saying, look, there was an experience there. It was fun to go to Toys R Us. It was fun to be immersed in that experience and seeing thousands of toys and get to play with them. And it was really, really an experience that is not replicated by shopping online. And it's funny you bring up the jingle, Allie, because I think this is a fitting tribute to Toys R Us. Chase Hoffelder, and I've seen a lot of his videos before. One of the things that he does is he sings songs in a minor key, and it makes them very, very sad. And you're probably going to tear up when you hear that Toys R Us jingle sung in a minor key by Chase. Check it out.
I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid. There's a million toys at Toys R Us that I could play with. Bikes and trains to video games. It was the biggest toy store there is.
Gee whiz.
I don't want to grow up. Because if I did, I wouldn't be a Toys R Us kid.
Come on.
Okay. That's amazing.
I still wanna be a Toys R Us.
Wait for it.
Kid.
Pretty sad, right?
If you just change the lyrics to like, I can't live without you, because that would be like the biggest hit for Ed Sheeran, you know, or Sam Smith.
That's a nice fitting tribute to Toys R Us, R.I.P. You can find that video and all the rest right now at krock.com or kevinandbean.com. It's a brand new Kevin and Bean Internet Roundup.
Internet Roundup on kevinandbean.com.
It's time for B-Mix's Guess.
B-Mix's Guess, yeah.
Ooh, ooh.
B-Mix's Guess, yeah.
Who gets penis slapped?
Penis a dick.
Pretty dope, man.
Just wanna tell ya.
I am the dumbest human that ever lived.
Now it's time for B-Mix's Guess.
Yes. I found this list interesting. We all enjoy fast food. Business Insider has put out their annual list of the top 10 fast food chains in America ranked by sales. All right, so this isn't by location. This isn't by who thinks what is the best fast food location. This is just by the amount of sales they have, money that they bring in. Top 10 fast food chains in the U.S. by sales in 2018. Kevin, you're at the head of the table. You get to go first. What say you?
A&W.
Why do you do this? Why do you sabotage the
game? I'm sabotage. That's a great guess.
Try a guess that is possibly in the top 10.
McDonald's.
It is number one. Yes, McDonald's.
That wasn't as fun.
It was the most successful fast food chain in America with $36.4 billion in yearly sales, by the way.
Wow.
And that was before the Szechuan sauce.
Right?
All right. You are on the board. Michael Catherwood.
I'm going to go with Hardee's / Carl's Jr.
I'm sorry. No, that's number 15 on the list. Oh. Not inside the top 10, but an excellent guess. Miss Ellen McKay.
I'm not sure if this would even count mm-hmm. as fast food because you normally think of it as coffee, but a Starbucks.
Allie, number two.
Wow, I wouldn't even thought of Starbucks as a fast food.
With $14.8 billion. Quite a drop, by the way, from McDonald's. But yes, Starbucks number two. Well done.
Thank you.
But that's because every cup of coffee is $30, right?
Sure.
So they don't have to sell a lot to make that kind of cash. All right, Kevin, you're up.
I'm going to say Burger King.
Burger King is number five.
Boom!
Nice, Kevin.
Well done. Been a long time since Kevin's had two in a row, ladies
The only
and
person with no points, Psycho Mike.
Yeah. All right.
All right, Mike, what do you got?
Subway.
Subway is number three. You guys are good. Already 1, 2, 3, and 5.
Fast food is our world, Bean.
Apparently so. Alan McKay.
I'm shocked Kevin hasn't said it. Taco Bell.
Sure, I got it on my list.
Only number four. Taco Bell, by the way, was the big news of this year's survey. They moved up to number four, surpassing Burger King as number five. The research firm Technomic says it's a result of their Locos Tacos, their nacho fries, and their quesaritos. So they have been surging upwards. So Taco Bell, number four. So there you go. You got the top five already, you guys. Kevin, I believe you're up.
Tony Romo's.
Tony Romo's, ladies and gentlemen. What a pull. No, I'm sorry. Michael.
All right. Wendy's.
Number six.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Really?
Did you guys all read this list before we started?
No, it's fast food. That's where I live.
Wendy's is $9 billion a year, you guys. Alan McKay?
See, this is tough because I don't think they're everywhere, mm-hmm. but I think they do a killing. Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A is number eight.
Ow!
Wow. Look at you.
Boom!
Wow.
Because I didn't think Wendy's was everywhere, so then maybe Chick-fil-A would be.
Chick-fil-A, by the way, and that's with being closed on Sunday. They still come in the top 10 with $8 billion in sales a year. All right, let's go around one more time.
KF Mother Effin' C.
I would have said the same thing.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
Number 14.
Oh,
number
that's
14.
Ridiculous.
I'm sorry. I can't
that's
help you.
That's absurd.
It's did not make the top 10.
I hate this list.
Mike, your final guess, please.
Mostly open 24 hours. I believe it's a national chain. I'm going to go with Jack in the Box.
Jack in the Box came in at number 19.
Ow!
Allie, your final guess.
Is pizza considered fast food?
Why don't you tell me?
I mean, I would guess so.
But then Domino's has to be, right?
Ooh. Number 10, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
I believe Allie McKay is our winner, you
she
guys.
She is our winner, yes.
Champion.
Thank
here's,
you.
Here's the top...
I've got a couple more guesses.
What else do you have?
Well, I was going to say Dunkin', but I don't think they're
Dunkin' Donuts
everywhere.
Was number 7 on the list, by the way.
Allie!
Give myself another point!
No, you don't get credit for that.
Here's your top 20 real fast. Number 20, Popeyes. Number 19, Jack in the Box. Then Little Caesars. Dairy Queen was at 17. Arby's, 16. Carl's Jr. / Hardee's, 15. That's that restaurant, depending on what part of the country you're in. Then KFC, Sonic, Chipotle, Panera Bread. Then Domino's, Pizza Hut, Chick-fil-A, Dunkin' Donuts. Yes, Pizza Hut. Dunkin' Donuts, Wendy's, Burger King, Taco Bell, Subway, Starbucks, and McDonald's. I would say you are all excellent at this game, but Allie is the winner. This has been Bean Makes Us Guess.
Bean Makes Us Guess, yeah.
Let's do a little You Be the Judge, shall we?
You be the judge right now. You can be the judge right now. You be the judge.
Here comes the judge.
You be the judge right now. Come on now and be the judge.
All right. Allie,
mm-hmm.
Mike,
yeah.
Beer Mug, you have all been sworn in. I am always fascinated by stories. High-profile crimes in the news, convictions are made or deals are pled to. And I'm always fascinated to see what the sentence is going to be on a particular crime and then decide whether I agree with it or not and whether you guys think it's fair and just as well. This is the story. Mike, you probably talked about it on your AM show. Allie, you remember we discussed it here. This is a story about a woman named Mona Lisa Perez who lives in Minnesota. And she and her boyfriend had a YouTube channel. His name was Pedro Riz. They had a YouTube channel where they did stunts, very popular YouTube channel. And they concocted one day that Mr. Ruiz was going to hold an encyclopedia against his chest. And then his girlfriend, Mona Lisa, about a foot away, was going to fire a shot from a 50 caliber Desert Eagle pistol to see if the bullet would go through the book. spoiler alert, it did. And he died. Mm. The bullet passed right through the book. He fell mortally wounded. She called 911, said we were doing a YouTube video. It went wrong. And that was it. So she was arrested and charged with second-degree manslaughter. It obviously was not her intention to kill her boyfriend.
Yeah.
She was doing it because they were doing a wacky YouTube video. In fact, and her defense brought this up, that she had spelled out her concerns on Twitter a few hours before the shooting, saying that, quote, me and Pedro are probably going to shoot one of the most dangerous videos ever. His idea, not mine. That was her defense in the court case, which was, look, it was his idea. He told me to do it. And I thought it was foolish at the time, and I let him know that, but I cooperated. So she is 20. She is a mother of two. You have heard her defense. You heard how her boyfriend died. She has been sentenced to what?
2 years of probation.
So no jail time, says Judge Catherwood.
Yeah.
That's right. What you're saying that's she
not
should
what
get?
That's not what I recommend. In my world, I'm saying if I was a betting man, that's what I say she got.
All right, Miss Allie McKay. Judge McKay.
Is she white?
Well, she's Hispanic.
Okay.
So, yes.
She's Hispanic in Minnesota.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That she's might change
She's not Hispanic
things.
In, like, Boyle Heights.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Here's the thing. She's 20. Mm-hmm. She has two children.
Right.
Does she know better? Absolutely. If she was like a 10-year-old, I'd be like, you probably know better than to shoot someone, right? Mm-hmm. But a 20-year-old, you know better. So I am going to give her no jail time because I'm a judge and I'm not smart about these things. However, I would give her 5 years as Judge Allie. But judge in the story, he's going to give her no jail time and probably some probation.
So you agree with Mike, it sounds like.
And she's no longer allowed to post videos.
Ooh, no videos. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, Judge Beermug.
Probably like 6 months of community service.
That's 6 months of community service is what you say. All right, here's the deal, you guys. 6 months in jail.
Ooh.
That she can serve in 10-day increments. She will be on probation for 10 years. And a lifetime ban on possessing a firearm or receiving any payment for telling her story about the shooting.
Okay.
So 6 months in jail is a little more than I think you guys were expecting.
It was, but she gets to serve it broken up. Like I've had friends who have had crimes that are, you know, nonviolent crimes, but they're still, you should know better. Mm-hmm. And you get to serve them like on weekends, like 30 weekends instead of.
And I suspect that's because she's 20 and has two kids, I would imagine.
Right.
So.
And I'm guessing that the guy she put into a grave with a Desert Eagle was probably the father?
Doesn't say here, but that's, you could assume that.
You know, so that means that she's the sole parent now. And although Allie's totally right. At 20, you should know better. Yeah. 20 still, she's a child.
So she's dumb. I want it to be true.
I do,
and
too.
And I will not hear anybody who says it is not true.
Agreed. It looks like a guy is very, very depressed, and he's next to a train track.
Mm-hmm.
And he's throwing his phone, and he's kicking stuff, and a man and a woman walk by, and then she turns around for some reason. She looks at him, and she realizes that he's pretty much running to jump in front of an oncoming train to kill himself. That's what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And she turns and she tackles him, saving his life, it looks like miraculously.
Yeah, within a second, he was going to be dead.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
She saves him and the train goes by at what looks like 60 miles an hour. I mean, it's just, it's an unbelievable video.
Yeah, it appears to be a train stop where the train passes by that station at a great rate of speed on its way to another station. So it's not supposed to stop there, and the guy looks like he is planning on jumping in front of the train on the tracks. Now, he's on the phone, guys, right? It's, at one point, he throws his bag, at another point, he throws his phone, and when the couple walks by pushing the baby stroller, she obviously notices that he's distressed, and maybe you know she can just see that this guy's got problems. I mean, he is... What do you think's going on with this dude, first of all?
Women.
Bitcoin.
Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And she turns around and, like, most people would not want anything to do with a guy who's ranting and raving by himself standing on a train platform.
Her husband wanted no part of it. He just stood there and watched.
Yeah.
Oh, he sure did.
She looks back and you see her husband's hand go on her back, like, keep it moving.
Let's keep going.
Let's go. We're not getting involved. I don't know. Is it women's intuition that kicked in that just said, he is distressed. Something is wrong with this guy. Let me check on him. Because she just turns around, starts walking, and you don't see anything except him, like, still agitated, and he's hunched down. So it doesn't look like he's going to jump. So she's just walking, and then he lurches up.
And she's like Ogletree for the Rams, man. She takes him down.
She should get an NFL contract immediately.
It was crazy.
I mean, the head was on the wrong side of the body, but, you know, I'll give it to her. It was a nice arm tackle.
I'm just stunned that she was able to react so quickly because it looks like he just lurches toward the train track.
He did make a sudden move. That's true.
And the fact that she had enough wherewithal to know, I've got to grab him and then get my body weight back.
Right.
Because she could have gone right there with him into the train.
Has anyone ever saved you guys' life? Dave? Allie? Bean?
No, I mean, the closest I got to saving somebody's life was when I was in a car and I was at a red light. And sorry, it was a green light and it was turning red. And a couple was going to cross the street. Mm-hmm. And I saw in my rearview mirror a car speeding up on the lane closest to them. And so I honked so they don't cross the street and the car blew the red light. I mean, that was as close as I got.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's and very possible that you could have said that.
Yeah, before. I mean, that car came barely out of nowhere. Mm. So, yeah, that was me. I'm a lifesaver.
I'm a lifesaver. Obviously. As well. I've done it. Yeah.
Okay.
I think.
Really?
Yeah, I was sitting. I was in Phoenix, and there was a train coming, and there was a woman that pulled up next to me on the left that was, I don't know, like a quarter of her car was over the train tracks. And I don't even think she knew it because she just stopped and she wasn't paying attention. So mm-hmm. I laid on my horn and honked as much as I could. I pointed at the train, and she put it in reverse, and she backed up, and the train hit her. And she got just enough back where the train hit the front of her car, and her car flipped up in the air and then landed.
What?
Facing the other direction.
Why have we never heard this story before?
I don't know. It happened a long time ago. We don't talk about
how.
I'm not a guy who toots my own horn, Bean. I'm a lifesaver, but I don't like to brag
about
it.
Well, Dave did, and it saved someone.
And so she actually, the car was facing the other direction, and she got out of the car and was scratching her head like, what just happened?
No way.
Yes. It was crazy. So I'm a lifesaver. Who else?
How did you preface that story with, I think?
I'm pretty sure I did. I mean, it was just...
You did!
She got off the tracks just enough, but she still got hit by the train, but she was all right.
Well, she would have been crushed by the train.
I think so, yeah.
Well, you're definitely not a car saver. Way to go, Kevin.
Right? I'm not a car saver, but I'm a lifesaver.
That's amazing. Wow.
Kevin Ryder, lifesaver.
What about you, Bean?
New feature.
No.
Paul is calling from Cyprus. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Okay, so I was heading back from the airport, and it was on the 605 South, and me and my buddy noticed that this car was on fire. So we immediately pulled over. No one was around, and we go, and this dude is pulling things out of his car super nonchalantly. I was like, dude, are you okay? He's like, my car's on fire. He's super confused. I'm like, dude, get out of here. So I had to, like, physically pull him away from his burning car, and then seconds later, it just went up and giant flame.
Wow.
Dude.
I'm pretty much a hero.
Yeah, you are.
Paul is pretty much a hero.
Well, Kevin's thinking about getting buttons made up that say, Kevin, lifesaver. Should we get a Paul button made for you
sure.
as well?
We can get matching ones, yeah.
I like it. All right. Thank you, sir. Line 7, please. Let's go down to Torrance. Our man Eddie has been patiently standing by. Eddie, you saved a life. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so it was when I was pretty young. It was a long time ago, and our neighbor had a pool, and she invited, like, a couple of us from the neighborhood, and they had somebody that they invited that had, like, you know, some Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So they were jumping into the floaties, those donuts,
right.
And I guess she must have missed it, and... she, like, went into the pool, and she didn't know how to swim, so I don't know, I just jumped in and tried to save her, and in the process, I nearly drowned myself, because I could barely swim myself, so I guess she grabbed onto the back of me,
mm-hmm.
and I was, like, I was just trying to swim to the edge, and I barely, well, I feel like I barely made it, but, you know, it just seemed like a long time from the middle of the pool to, and that was only, like, you know, maybe about, like, 4 feet from the edge.
That's so crazy.
Was, hey, when you can't swim, 4 feet is an ocean, man, you know?
Yeah. So
you did a good thing, and you get a button too. Thank you for the call, sir. We appreciate it.
Let's go to David C. while we still have time, because
I agree, this sounds like the most dramatic one ever.
Hey, David,
how you doing? Good morning.
What happened, dude?
Going on my way home from church, we went to go buy a drink, me and my girlfriend. We're on Rosecrans on the 710 freeway. We're going down that way. And my girlfriend noticed some guy, you know, distressed. So we busted a U-turn, you know, and by the time I get there, he's already on the bridge ready to jump off. And so I just stopped the car in the middle of the freeway. I mean, in the middle of the street, mm-hmm. and I just went straight to him, and I told him, give me 5 minutes, you know, don't do what you got to do. And, you know, we just talked until the police came, because he didn't want to touch him. And the more we got close, the more he was ready to go. So I just pretty much just stayed there and talked to him and until the police came. And I guess they talked to him. I don't know what else happened to that.
Wow, that's fantastic. Wow.
How did you know what to say to him to calm him down and stop him from jumping?
You know, there's a lot of people who go through situations like that. And I've been through a situation like that before. And the only way you could talk to them is, you know, just keep asking them the same question, you know, and just tell them that people care about them, you know. Another thing is you just got to tell them that, even though that they don't want to hear it. You know, he was cursing at me and just telling me things that I don't want to hear, but, you know, I don't want to see him jump off. So, you know, I was telling him that I care about him, and I would stop in the middle of the street where there's traffic and leave my car there just to go and help him, because even though I don't know him.
You're an amazing person. That's awesome.
Look at you on the way back from church getting a cocktail.
Right?
David, you're wonderful.
How long would you say you talked to that guy before the police got there?
I'll say between 5 to 15 minutes.
Wow. Something else, man.
Wow.
You're a good man. We're proud to have you as a listener, David. Thanks a lot for calling in today, okay?
We appreciate it.
All right, you guys, it's time to meet Amanda Teague. She is from Downpatrick, Northern Ireland. She is tired of physical world men, Kevin.
Sure.
And has found love in the ghost of an 18th century Haitian pirate. She is now legally married to him. Now, you haven't heard from her yet. I got some tape standing by.
I know. I love her.
Is she automatically crazy? Or is it possible she's onto something here?
Clearly automatic crazy. But
you think crazy?
Really? Let's hear her
but
out.
But I love crazy. I'm good with
well,
crazy.
Well, why don't we start with the very first clip to get to the only thing you're interested in, which is how exactly does sexy time work when you're married to a ghost?
Obviously, certain positions work better for spiritual sex than others. It's easier to feel energy, for example, in the missionary position than it would be if you were on top. It would be more difficult.
I wish the interviewer had followed up with some questions as to why.
I have many questions about that.
Like, how can that even be? How can one position be more difficult than another when you're, I'm sorry, Amanda, in bed by yourself?
Well, if you're on top with the ghost, then you're squishing him because he can't withstand your weight, right? You'd just be going right through him.
Okay.
You'd rather.
She seems to be. Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you speak Amanda. That concerns me a great
100%.
deal. 100%. One of the things I love about this interview, by the way, and I don't know who did it, is the sexy music that they play before and during all the clips. It's like the weirdest thing that's happening. But let's meet Amanda and her husband, Jack, shall we?
My name is Amanda Sparrow Large Teague. I'm a witch, I'm a spiritual teacher, and I'm well known for marrying the ghost of a 300-year-old pirate.
Okay, Amanda is a witch, by the way, spiritual teacher. What she doesn't mention in the clip that I found in my deep research dive is that she also works as a Jack Sparrow impersonator.
I was wondering where the sparrow came from.
A Jack Sparrow impersonator.
So what are the chances that her ghost lover would be a 300-year-old pirate?
How about that?
She's a Jack Sparrow impersonator. Let's hear some more from Amanda.
Well, how we first met was I was in my room and I felt this energy around me. It was unfamiliar to me. It was not one of the energies that I was used to working with. So at that point, I said, clearly, this energy, this entity wants to connect with me, has something that it wants to say. So I decided that I would communicate.
More slow jams.
First thing he said to me is, I'm dead, you know. And I was, yes, I do, I get that.
I like that he opens with, I'm dead, you know.
That's not a good opening line.
Well, if you're a ghost, though, it's nice to get that out of the way
but
first.
But if you're trying to score, I mean, do you lead with I'm dead?
I don't think so. I love that Amanda is in no way discouraged by the fact that the spirit is reaching out to her and is dead. She's open-minded enough to hear what Jack has to say.
So I asked him, obviously, who he was and what his purpose was. He told me that his name was Jack Teague and that he was a pirate. We would spend quite a lot of time connecting and I got to know him quite well. I discovered myself that I had romantic feelings towards him. And obviously he felt the same way. So it was shortly after Christmas in 2016 when he first put it to me that it was possible for us to have a relationship.
So apparently it sounds like Jack is the one who convinced her, hey, I know, you know, we're living in different planes here, but it's still okay. We can be together. Sounds like he kind of talked her into it.
She was a willing participant. Yeah.
It sounds like, Allie, not that you would know anything about sad, lonely women, but this is a step too far is to become married to the dead, right, I think?
Listen, ghost sex is apparently real.
Is it?
And I am more than willing to try it out for the show. Okay. If another entity wants to come and we can do a little, you know, ghost boning.
Right.
But people truly believe that they have had sex with ghosts.
More than just this woman?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It
sex
is a thing.
Sex with ghosts.
It's, yeah,
and Amanda
real.
Amanda has rules, by the way. She does talk in the interview later that, for instance, when you're having ghost sex, you're not allowed to – it cannot be masturbation. You're not allowed to touch yourself during ghost sex. It has to be exactly as if it were another person. So she's
strangely unfulfilling for her.
She claims it works. There is.
Is that right?
She does. She claims there is a conclusion. She also claims, by the way, and this is a term I was unfamiliar with, that she is demisexual. Do you guys know what demisexual
she
is?
She only has sex with Demi Moore.
Yeah.
Let's find out.
Wow. I suppose my friends, most of them that had spiritual sex, it would have been very casual and very random. It would have been with different spirits. But that's not the type of person I am. I'm also demisexual.
Demisexual are people who can only enjoy sex with people they are emotionally committed to.
Oh.
So no random sex.
I see.
But, by the way, Amanda, who is not an unattractive older woman, if I remember correctly from the piece I read, has been married 5 times previously. With 6 children from her 5 marriages.
Wow, she's so tired of men.
She's no stranger to love. So maybe that's where some of this is coming from. Is
she
after
hates
5 divorces.
Some men. Yep.
Yeah, she's thinking, I got it. There must be something better out there.
So for me, having that strong connection and that attachment was very important before embarking on any kind of a sexual relationship. So I talked to Jack about that, and then he was like, well, you know, we can get married. Actually, it wasn't as difficult as I thought. There is a registrar. There has to be verbal consent on both parts. It wouldn't be comfortable for me to give consent on behalf of Jack, because then it's really like me answering for him.
Right,
he had
yes.
to go and try and source a medium who could connect with Jack. This is my wedding ring, and his is the same. We got matching wedding rings. We had a candle representing him, and I put the ring on the candle. So that's how we managed that one.
So they got married on a pirate ship in international waters, because apparently there are a number of countries in the world that recognize ghost marriages as legal.
What?
Stop it.
And she speaks to her husband through a medium. One more clip, by the way, and this is what I call her drop the mic moment, where she has a comment for all the haters who just think she's crazy.
If you're an atheist and you believe in nothing, fair enough. But if you believe in God, then I don't see why you don't believe in what's happened to me, because there's no more evidence to support God's existence than there is Jack Teague's existence. It is just a matter of faith.
So boom, ladies and gentlemen, Amanda. It's a matter of faith.
I do love the sexy music choice.
It's crazy, right? I do hope it works out for Amanda and Jack.
Right, I'd hate to see a sixth divorce.
Well, because
or if
this
just ghosts her.
Don't want that, do we?